Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of those posts covering finance and property news. It's another Monday, and Edwin is back for another rant. Edwin, hello.
Martin. Yeah, holy spider monkeys and lizards drinking. You know what? Yeah, that property that we spoke about last week, in the tips, picture form, it's actually been rented. Can you believe it? It actually got rented on the weekend.
Wow! So this is the one with the very fine electricity switchboard, right? Looking absolutely pristine, sort of. And
this was
this is the one with the asbestos roof, and it's been rented. Yeah. Wow!
Been rented, and they're actually getting more than what they were renting it for before. I think that switchboard was inspired by Tesla. I think it was set up by Tesla by the looks of it. Anyway, but probably not. But it sort of dates back to I would say the house was probably built in the early 50s, and that's as old as how old the switchboard is. But look, it's absolutely shameful. Now our sources, our insiders, tell us that, although the agent made promises that there will be a smoke alarm, apparently and allegedly, there are still no functioning smoke alarms in the house, and you've got this situation. I wanted to bring this up, and we'll be bringing up other aspects as to what's happening out on the ground, which you and I have been talking about for over a year, 2 years more to the point. And we were calling that there was going to be a rental stress, there was going to be people were going to be squeezed, and people were going to be fearful about making any sort of complaints. And this is the mess that we're getting, that we're walking into, Martin, where you've got these rental properties in this state of this repair, and absolutely they are death traps. They are an injury waiting to happen. And what price do you put on a life, or what price do you put on a limb, what price do you put on your on your ongoing health, Mark? This is shameful. The state government needs to really step in, and the regulators really need to step in and do something about it.
Well, that's right. So we know that the rental pressure is huge. In fact, the latest data from my surveys show that rental stress has now gone even higher than it's ever gone before. It's a new record, which is shameful. And people are desperate. They'll rent almost anything. But the fire alarm thing's important, right? Because that's a regulation. So in theory, properties should always have smoke alarms fitted before they're actually let.
Well, that's right. And when I was running the rent roll, we ran it for many years, we would always encourage our landlords to get what we call hardwired smoke alarms put in and checked every time, obviously, a tenant vacates. And we get a new tenant in, or the alternative is every 6 or 12 months. To change the batteries. Now the other thing, Martin, is the fact that a lot of these, years ago, I don't know how true this is now, but 6 or so years ago, I was informed that the smoke alarms that people were literally buying from Bunnings were you can't tell whether one is a smoke alarm or a heat alarm, and this is something that the everyday person won't know until they have a closer look. They all look the same, and this is what one of these inspectors informed me and showed me by doing the test. And I mean, even before that, I was always encouraging our landlords to put hardwired smoke alarms anyway in the premises, just that added level of protection for the tenant. So if you're asking an individual, if you're asking a person to pay a certain amount of money for a rental, I mean, this is just the basic standard requirements, let alone with the proposed regulations of the proposed minimum standards that Queensland have now got, and also Victoria, and we're going to have these. But at the end of the day, whether you have these minimum standards, whether you have all sorts of levels of checks and balances, at the end of the day, if the regulators aren't out there checking files, not only files but also checking premises, one way or another, there's got to be something that has to be done where we've got more boots on the ground. Effectively, what's required is some sort of a police force policing, an enforcing agency to go around and check these rental properties. And it's not hard to know what properties are in it, because I mean, there's bonds registered with the Rental Bond Board, and even if you've got a private if even if your property is being rented privately, by law, there's supposed to be a bond lodged as well, right? Now, outside of that, we've got the other dilemma and the other mayhem and major issues that we're going to walk into, and that is the budget accommodation that the Wheelchair Chatterers and the sleeping the sleeping tigers are going to get into, and already functioning, and hence the reason why we're seeing a lot less properties on the market. So that in turn brings about more and greater issues of concern, greater becomes more problematic, because obviously when your focus is on just achieving the higher levels of income, you can bet your bottom dollar that the landlords or the property owners are not going to really care much about safety of the tenants that they put in, whether they be students, whether they be Aussies, whether ghost migrants, whatever. I mean, at the end of the day, it seems to be that the old mighty dollar is really what makes them tick.
Well, it's an important point, Edwin, and I guess there's two questions. The first question is, to what extent is it actually landlords deliberately not doing what they should be doing to comply with the current regulations? To what extent is it agents who are just avoiding, the things they should be focusing on? This all goes back to this concept of self-regulation, industry self-regulation. The industry will actually regulate itself. We don't need any externality. We don't need any checks and balances. Now, I must tell you that my view of that is that it's completely failed. Look at building inspections, for example. You have to have some means of making sure that things that should be being done are being done. You can't just rely on the goodwill and the trust of agents or landlords. I guess probably you're right. It's all about the dollar, right? That's what this is about. This is about the dollar.
Yeah, look, it is, Martin, and it's and we're in a the renters are in a quagmire, right? Because if they complain, they get given notice, and the landlords will make all sorts of excuses in order to kick him out. The typical one is put the property on the market, or allegedly going to go on the market, and then you give them a quick notice to vacate if they're on a rolling lease or a month by month lease. You've got no say. So this is why a lot of the tenants aren't saying anything, because there are no choices. There really aren't any choices for the tenants to go to, and more to the point, when it's a small family or a larger family, and there are certain requirements needed when you want to be within close proximity to certain schools, and also when you've got your little friends, so your cats and your dogs and other friends that you may that take along with you. So it becomes hard, Mark. But and this is where one would say that if it was a renter's market, then yeah, we could basically, as a renter, we could ask for a certain reports to be mandatory from the provided by the landlord or by the real estate agency, right? You could ask for that, but as renters, the renters have lost their voice whilst they've got no choice. They've literally been put in a quagmire and basically sit there, sit in the corner, shut up, and don't say anything, and they're living in squalor, and they will continue to live in squalor whilst we've got this rental squeeze. And this is where the state government needs to step up, and George, from that we often have on the rants, he's been very vocal about having mandatory changes to the procedures and the standards or the documentation that real estate agencies must have. So you've got that happening on one side. There's we've got a glimmer of hope where George and I speak about. We've got a glimmer of hope that this government is going to do something positive. But at the end of the day, Martin, we've got such a huge and this pool of private lettings and budget accommodation lettings, more to the point, that go under the radar. That there are no bonds lodged with the Rental Bond Board, because obviously it's cash in hand in most of the cases, if not all the cases. It's cash in hand, and it's accommodation or premises that have been converted into room lettings or hot bedding, as the terminology goes. So, and these are things. How do you police that? How do you police the issues around that? It's very difficult, and it's very hard and very complicated. And as of right now, I can tell you, based on my conversations with George, Fair Trading are really not doing much, or not prepared to do anything, because they're just ill-equipped. They really are ill-equipped, and things are only going to get worse for the renters. So this is why I go back to our conversations earlier on in the year, and also last year, and that live rant that we did not too long ago, a month or so ago, where we encourage people to that if you know to talk and reach out to the property managers and start negotiating a long-term lease, because things are just going to get worse. They're not going to get any better.
No, absolutely. And this is a very, very concerning set of trends, and it's pretty national, isn't it, across the country? I mean, I would argue that there are some minor differences in the regulatory frameworks across the country, but the net effect is pretty much the same. And that means that renters who have the ability to negotiate should take advantage of that. But I'm also very conscious of the point you made earlier on, that there are still many renters who are very scared to raise anything, because as soon as they do, they're worried they might just get kicked out. And there are very few protections to stop that happening, particularly if the landlord decides to, quote, sell or whatever. So it's really, really tricky. And everything that I'm seeing at the moment in the on the data suggests it's going to get worse. High migration, more people looking for somewhere to rent, for example. And also the supply of rental property is diminishing. And part of that is, as you say, because it's being reconverted into little single units and all those sorts of things. But other property investors are saying it's impossible. I can't make enough money from my rental property to be able to sustain what I've got, so I'm looking to sell. So it's a mess. It's a big mess. It's been created by bad, bad policy over many, many years. But at the end of the day, it's those poor renters that are actually caught in the crossfire.
Look, there, and this is the unfortunate thing. It only seems like it's only been the last 2 or 3 weeks that the mainstream media are picking up on the subject that or the topics that you and I've been talking about, with around rental, the rental pain that we were going to be walking into, which we were calling over a year ago, as I said, 2 years ago. And it's a cycle. I mean, even 2.5 years ago, I was starting to post videos from my open house inspections of the condition of some of the so-called granny flats in the western suburbs that had been rented out, and those properties have been put up for sale. And I put up a few of those videos on my Twitter feed, and it was a shocking mess. And this is and that was back then. Two and a half years ago, we're already seeing. And I said, this is the cycle, and this is what happens when there is a rental squeeze, when people have got no choice, and we were, and at that time that I was posting those, you and I were talking about the immigration lever that the government was going to pull, and they pulled it. And would it have been any better with ScoMo and Partners Real Estate Group? I don't think so. Maybe not as bad, but I think the fix was already in, and it has been for many decades. So, but unfortunately now it's going to be a lot harder than what it was in the past. And this is where a lot of this is perhaps in the WeChat chatter segment. I just want to bring to our viewers' attention, and again, I stress, and when I talk about the WeChat chatter, is because they are very robust and very active group of investors that are out there, and they are calling the second wave, and this is what we've been talking about for a while now, Martin. That the second wave of property buyers, like you said earlier on, was that there's the your typical mum and dad investor that put the properties up for sale. They put the properties up for sale. The investment properties up because the rental isn't covering the mortgage repayments. But the WeChat chatterers and the sleeping tigers, they're doing something totally different than what you and I would otherwise do in presenting a property to to the rental arena. And they don't present it to the normal rental arena, to your traditional rental arena. They go at it themselves for obvious reasons. And in the WeChat chatter segment that we've got today, we've got the even Tom Panos is all excited, and even Tom says, "We're back, baby, we're back." And I tweeted back at Tom's post, apart from the one that I put out there as to the what's at, what we're seeing as well, as to what Dusty and I are looking at very closely, and that is the simple fact that, hey, sexy never left. To quote the famous words of Prince, in other words, the market never really left. It's just that people haven't been following the numbers like we've been following the numbers. Call me a all sorts of names. Call me a bull in bear's clothing. I think all that for me and Dusty went out the door in 2020, March of 2020, because now the most important aspect of the market for us back since then was give a close look at the numbers, because things are changing on a dime. Government policies are changing from one week to the next. The what our illustrious leaders do, are changing just as quickly as what the geopolitical events in the world changing, and also what Xi Jinping does as well. So all these changes, we've got there is no control. But one of the things that we've been very, very close, very careful and kept a very close eye on are the numbers on the market. And I guess apart from what I've put out on that tweet and the message that I put out there, it's the video that you've got to watch, Martin. The videos that you've got to watch, the that are on those on those posts, and hopefully you're able to share that the video of that auction also at Eastwood, where they had something like 200 attendees at the auction. Now, I don't know how many people registered because I wasn't there. This is the majority of them were WeChat chatterers there, and this duplex sold for $3.2 million, right, at Eastwood, and two buyers were battling it out. Now, this isn't a rental property. This is obviously a personal, a principal place of residence for somebody. But what I'm saying is that there's still a lot of money out there, and the WeChat chatterers and the sleeping tigers are coming in with a lot of money into the market, and they are waiting for people that can't make heads or tails of paying the mortgages through your traditional means of rentals. They're going to, as they dump their properties, well, these groups are coming in and snapping them up, and those two videos are just evidence of what's happening out there, apart from the ones that the attendances where we went to on the weekend ourselves. I mean, that weren't as big as these two that were shared over the weekend. One on WeChat, the other one on Tom Panos's feed. It's interesting to see how hungry people still are for property.
Yeah, it is interesting, and it's fascinating again because I think, Edwin, it's worth underscoring that it's not a uniform picture, right? We always have to come back to the fact that there are some areas where it's very hot, and there are some areas where there are lots of people chasing, relatively small supplies of property. There are other areas, though, and this is true across the country as well as across Sydney, and in the regions. There are other areas where prices are still sliding and where the appetite to buy is much, much lower. And I always come back to this point that as soon as you start talking about generic averages of numbers, you miss the critical granularity that you need to see to be able to understand what's really going on. And therefore, show me the numbers is the right call, but show me the numbers at a granular level. That's really, really critical.
Oh, look, 100%, Martin, and obviously, my point of view is that from what we see in Sydney, that is our backyard. That is what we share about. We don't I don't talk about a lot of the other markets other than what others share, and always refer back to a lot of others that are in those states or in those cities that talk about those properties. And as what in some regional areas of New South Wales, because of my contacts there, you and I've said that it's a totally different landscape because of the industry or businesses, or more to the point where banking institutions have literally picked up stumps and left, and now they've left the town in a mess. And that is the pain. And this is th this goes back to like you said, show me the numbers. Show me the numbers. And also, I did see a post today, or a little snippet of our mate, our old mate Tom, featured on Channel 10, saying that he sold a property in Greenacre for $75,000 or $79,000 less than what it was bought for in the peak of the market. Again, yeah, look, yeah, you can, people on all the Twitter artsy fans were out there rejoicing and calling the mortgage stress. But again, you've got to look at those things at a granular level. You look back at the history of that purchase. And in my point of view, this is my personal point of view, when they bought that house in the first instance, they overpaid by by 15, 10, 15% anyway. And this is where we're going to go back to again. To we're in a period, Martin, the beginning of spring, similar to last year, where I pointed out that we are going to get two types of stories, at two different sides of the spectrum, right? So we're going to get your out of line sales that are going to that the mainstream media are going to pick up on and say, see the mortgage stress, it's blah blah blah, and because it's all for pittance in comparison to what it was bought for. And then you're going to get your other side as well, where you've got massive crowds. Look, the West Pennant Hills one that sorry, West not West Pennant Hills, West Pimble, that Tom speaks about in that, and I'll put that Tom's chat on that on my Twitter feed, Tom's video on there. I mean, there's a reason why a lot of these people are gravitating to the WeChat chatters are gravitating to that area. Is because, I mean, to them, the holy grail is to live within the catchment area of Pymble Ladies College, and because that's where they're going to put their kids. So you're always going to get that they're going to be beating each other up for that piece of land there. And so yeah, you've got to look at not only the area of the suburb, the street, but also the type of dwelling and what it's being used for. And this is, I just got to a point where on Twitter, I just don't respond to a lot of the remarks that people are posting or saying, or just let it get run wild, because you try to sort of explain to people or these pundits that that talk that pick a property, but when you do your research on it and you do your background on it, and I'll even call the agent that's got carriage of that particular sale, and I'll get a heads up on the background, and you find out it's a development side or developers after it or this or that. And then at the end of the day, we've also got ridiculous asking prices that we know are nowhere near the truth, which is your typical underquoting, misleading, deceptive conduct by the agents that they love to dabble with and create this illusion of oh, it's going to be sold very cheaply, even below what they bought it for, and it has an opposite effect. But this is where people have got to wake up, and I think that, and I believe, I am a true believer that our followers, that listen to the Monday night rants, are taking a lot of this to to internalizing a lot of what we've been sharing, a lot of what I've been saying, and they are adopting it out there. And I'll share this as part of the last segment of the part of the last bit of the WeChat chatter segment. So I was talking to an agent over the weekend, and we're just having a friendly chat, and then he goes, "Mate, I just saw something weird happen today." I said, "What happened?" Said there was this lady. And she had a torch with her, and she went to the backyard, and she started wanting to crawl into the manhole, and said something along the lines, "I don't trust the building reports. I have to check them out myself." So apparently, this middle-aged lady, got down on her on all fours, had a torch and started calling it. I can bet your bottom dollar, Martin, she's a follower of the Monday Night Property Rants.
That's good to hear. Absolutely. I've had a few people also give me little accounts of little forays that they've had, and it's interesting how the agents don't like it. The agents don't like people digging around and fossicking in the basement and things,
Yeah.
it's not part of the script.
No, to him it was a surprise, and I'm sort of looking at him and saying, "Well, mate, what would you do?" that's something I often try to do as much as I can whilst I'm out there. You do it in the private inspections, not so much in the open houses, unless I want to make a lot of noise and scare a few people above, as I tap underneath. But
Well,
yeah, that's all part of the theatrics and part of the plan, right? But other than that, it's yeah. Why not?
it's actually quite an interesting strategy. You start pointing out defects, and people, "Oh, I didn't see that. Oh, I didn't see that." Oh, yeah, it could even influence the market. Now, there's another. Last week, we did a little piece on what was happening around Gympie, right? With these sort of little things. Factory built, rolled into position. They've got wheels. It looks like they can be wheeled away again later. But this is just an example of Lego-like construction, right? And we're hearing there's a bit more of it around.
Yeah, look, there's a lot more of it. You and I have been talking about it. I can't see these the market being assisted in any way. This is the rental market. But when we put that a thing a tweet out, where we got notified by one of the WeChat chatterers on WeChat, that they were m making inquiry, allegedly, again, this is allegedly. A couple of others confirmed it, that I've never met, that we follow each other on Twitter, That I know he's an expat that works a lot in China, and there are moves to bring in a lot of this modular or portable dwellings. And I can only imagine the government's involvement with it is to really to try and put temporary accommodation out there. But I mean, what's the alternative, Martin? What's the alternative apart from a caravan, a tent, or sleeping in the back, in the back seat of your car? It's very hard to do that when you're lugging around kids and little friends with you, right? So I don't know. I don't know. I think modular is the future. The immediate future, anyway. I can't see things being approved and put into action. And even if they were, again, I'll go back and to a previous podcast and say that even if the approvals were given today, and we put shovel to the ground tomorrow, a lot of these high-rise developments that the state governments are talking about. Or going up as opposed to going out. They're going to be, they're 2 3 years at best away from being completed and getting your occupation certificate. So I don't know. What is the alternative apart from, I guess you could live under a tree. I don't know.
No, it's a tough question, but I guess my question is this: that these temporary modular buildings, whether they be standalone or whether they be part of a bigger construction project, I wonder to what extent the building regulations are actually appropriately applied to them, and to what extent where there could be cutting of corners that again nobody notices until it's all up. And then later it all goes terribly wrong. And there's a bit of a parallel in the UK at the moment. We've got this thing called RAC concrete, which is effectively aerated concrete that was used between the 1950s and about the 1990s in the UK. And it was used for a lot of buildings, including a lot of schools and other public buildings. And suddenly they've discovered that all of this stuff that was thrown up, and is now well past the sell-by date, as it were, it's falling apart. And so there was an announcement late last week, because the new school term is just about to start, late last week, saying they're going to have to close classrooms or even some schools in some areas while they try and solve this issue. Now, this is an issue that's been known around for some time, but nobody's done anything about. And my worry is that some of the current developments in Australia with regard to quick building techniques and throwing stuff up and trying to actually build quickly could be going down precisely the same route with effectively minimal or substandard construction, which won't actually show immediately but will show down the track. And I just think we could be backing ourselves into another cul-de-sac here.
Yeah, look, I guess that to me it sounds like the equivalent of Hebel, and Hebel that's still used in you can still buy Hebel from Bunnings, and a lot of people aren't aware that I don't know what type or what imported or what brand of Hebel, but it also contains a percentage of asbestos as well, so it makes that built plush homes in around Strathfield in those areas, Burwood, Concord, they built with the cladding made out of Hebel. Once they and this is late 90s, and they gave it up because of the contaminants that they soon learned about. But we're still using it, Martin. There's the look. Quick construction, but yeah, with regard to quick construction, with regard to these modular homes, I would imagine I can only but make generalizations and guesses that they're going to be like your temporary accommodation, but with our state governments and the way that that they run the budgets and even the federal government, right? Something that's meant to be a temporary solution ends up being a half a century solution. So I can see that even if they brought in these modular homes or these kit homes from China that meet certain standards, your height, mainly around your height, your 2.4 meter, minimum height restrictions and all this sort of stuff, and ventilation, crossflow ventilation, and the like. Being modular just means that you could, uproot it, lift it up, and park it elsewhere. So as a temporary accommodation. So, and that gets around a lot of the regulations from your local state government, your local, so your local councils as well, your local LGAs, because it's not a fixed dwelling, it's a temporary dwelling. So I guess that's one way to look at it. But that could end up being literally ovens in the summer, and bloody ice boxes in winter if they don't have the right insulation. Who knows, Martin? But surely something has got to be done, regardless of which way they go. But at the moment, I just heard one story on the mainstream media, and that's about it. We're still fixated on the voice. We're still fixated on nuclear submarines. We're still fixated on wars abroad. We're still fixated on other issues. But and the opposition are just as bad as the current government. So, I mean, I don't know. I just don't see them in doing anything that's giving the renters or the people that are aspiring to even buy a principal place of residence, whatever it may be. They're not giving them any hope. This Aussie dream has turned into a bloody nightmare, and turned into a bloody nightmare as far as I'm concerned. Back in 2013, 2015.
Yeah, well, the seeds were laid, some time ago, and unfortunately now it's all getting, pretty difficult. As you say, though, a lot of politicians prefer you to look over there rather than over there, right? And to my mind, the whole concept of having a safe and secure place to live, which should be, I think, a basic human right, is now, it's okay for some who can afford it, but for so many people who can't. So it becomes a critical issue. And as you say, what might be okay, in the spring or the autumn, it's going to be way too baking hot in the summer and way too horribly cold in the winter. And that's just another ex unacceptable face of the current housing strategies that have been rolled out or not rolled out, depending on how you look at it, right? And people have made a lot of money, but unfortunately, a lot of ordinary people are actually up against the wall now with no way out. And there's no real proper intent, in my view, to solve any of this. It's just all too hard. Let's move on and talk about the numbers just briefly, because there wasn't a lot to say really. If you look on the 28th of the 8th, this is for the Sydney region, we were at what, 16,323, and then if you look at the latest, which is this week, the 4th of September, it's 16,623. So a slight increase, Edwin, but still well below long-term trends.
Look, it is. Last year, I said sometime last year, we were getting about 500 new listings a week, but we were climbing. They were adding. There weren't a lot. There wasn't a lot of activity. The demand wasn't as high as what it is now. We could end up with we could end up with closer to your 17,000 by the end of this by the end of this week. We might even tip the 17,000. But by the end of the week, but as quickly as they come on, that they are getting absorbed, for in my view, for no other reason other than the, people are comparing the mortgages to rents. People that are coming into the country have got more money than what they the migrants that are coming in have got, are coming in with a lot more money than what they were in historically. And obviously, there's the WeChat chatter appetite, and as I said, they're calling the second wave. And with regards to even that big investment, local WeChat investment group, one of the biggest in New South Wales or Sydney, where they're poised, or they're pushing their members to buy five properties over the next 5 years. And basically, what I heard yesterday with regards to that group, anybody that cannot show in cannot show that they can basically show liquidity of up to $1 million to the leader of that group is basically being ousted from that group. I mean, this is how bold they are in terms of their appetite to buy into property. Look, call it what you will with regards to who's leading that group. He's making a lot of money, obviously, but there's a lot of people that are following, and there are a lot of people that are attentive to that, and there is a lot of people with a lot of cash. So going back to the numbers, what I'm saying is there's a lot of opposition to your local home buyers, your local Aussie groups or battlers that would just want to just they just want a roof over their head. They just want a permanent roof over their heads. They don't care at the moment. They just want something, peace of mind. They just want to give the young family, the family a home, stability of education, and whatever the case. But who's you look at the government policies over the last couple of years, more to the point, and they've just been throwing more money after money after money, and it's just created a deeper hole, and a deeper hole for the first time buyers to try to crawl out of and be a part of, the group of people that have got a home. Look, a lot of people that we speak with, a lot of people that are out there, they don't really. They do care, but at the same time, they don't care that the interest rates are so high, Martin, because at the end of the day, they say to me, Edwin, we got to make that sacrifice, but we just can't seem to find anything. And after sitting down with them for an hour or 2 hours, after a few tears and home truths, come to the realization that they've got no choice but to move further afield, be prepared to commute a lot longer to go to go to work, and basically put the kids in look for options, schooling options, so they've got a choice of whether to go over the mountains, over towards Gosford, or way past the rule. Because living closer to the Sydney CBD is just no longer an option, and they've got the fear of also being kicked out of the rental accommodation, which is something that's in the back of a lot of people's mind, Mark.
No, it is absolutely. I'm getting the same thing through my one-to-one conversations, and people are having to compromise on location, compromise on property, but a lot of renters are saying, I've got to get out of the rental sector regardless, even if I'm going to have to pay more, even if I'm going to actually get myself into serious levels of debt, because the truth is that the uncomfortable life of living in a rental accommodation when you don't know how long you're going to be there, you don't know what the rent's going to be in the weeks or months ahead, that is something which people, more and more people are saying, I've got to find an alternative. So I'm afraid that it's a very important motivator for many people now. We might just touch on the Melbourne numbers while we're looking at the sort of the figures. So last week in Melbourne it was 23,551, and then if you look at this week, this is on the 4th, 23,910. So again, another little hike up, but again, I think, Edwin, not a huge amount of movement. And interestingly, what I'm seeing with the Melbourne numbers is that the new property that's coming on, you can put it into two buckets. There is some more attractive property, and that gets grabbed very quickly. And then there is some less attractive property, which is adding to the bulk of property that's listed for a long period of time, and is probably overpriced and is not selling. So it is interesting again to go granular when you look at these numbers too.
Yeah. Again, it'll be interesting. I haven't done the rental figures in Melbourne, but it would be interesting to see what they are as well. But there's a lot. There's certainly a lot more properties on the market in Melbourne, and one would hope that, that those numbers are reflective of the Sydney market. But I at the moment, I'm still calling the Mexican standoff. I'm not seeing any changes, and even if even if things numbers start dropping on market, as many expect, I think we still got to get to your 20,000 on market across the board. Whether it be a 50-50 split between homes and apartments, before we can really quench this. The thirst of the dragon, as I put up on Twitter, or the or the hunger of the sleeping tiger, because they those groups are very, very hungry. The auction numbers, again, it's for me, it's reflective of the fact that, that there's not a lot of there's not a lot of people that are wanting to sell, because when I look at these numbers, what I see is people's reluctance to sell. They're only going to be selling if they're willing. It was Super Saturday last Saturday, and the numbers weren't much, weren't much. Were only a little bit higher than what they are now. The whole buzz was that spring was going to really bring out the sellers. It's still early days, I guess, but we'll wait and see until the middle of September, and when things really start picking up. But again, when you start looking at these things granular, when you start looking at the numbers granular, whether it be listings on market or auctions, you start seeing some suburbs are re reacting a lot more positive for buyers than a lot of others, and that could be right next door to each other. And again, it comes back to school catchment areas, type of dwelling. You've got your historical historical connotations or historical references to a suburb could be next door to another suburb, and the there's still a bit of a history, and hence there's even the prices are reflective. Are vastly apart, given although they're right next to each other. You've got these sort of scenarios. So yeah, you've got to look at things very, very granular. But again, looking at the numbers, to me, there's because there's not a lot of choice for people to go to. I think they're holding back because I would have, the way that people are talking, the mainstream are talking, the way that Tom, our mate Tom, talks. In his conversations with a lot of other agencies, one would expect the auctions on market should be closer to 1200 as opposed to 800.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's just look at the rentals, because this is the Sydney rentals. This is what you've been tracking, and it's worth looking at the slightly longer trend. So the 14th of August, there were 10,840 listed, right? If you look at the following week, 10,616. Following week, 10,315, and then the 4th of September, 9,931. Looks like a trend to me, Edwin.
It's and we were we've been tracking it a little bit longer than this, and we were actually 11,000 the over 11,000 the previous month, if you recall, and it's just to keeps on diminishing, and that is the scary thing. But I've never seen the numbers so low. I have never seen it so low, and this trend is really scaring the bejeebies out of me. And this goes back to our advice, regardless of what our old girl Sue was it Sue Susan Sue I think I can't remember or Jan, the property manager slash landlord that had five properties, and was was very contradictory to what I was saying and what I was suggesting, to go out there and negotiate a long-term lease. The mean girl, can't remember her name, but yeah, look, you've got no choice. You've got it, pain. It's going to get. There's going to be a lot more pain. There are some parts of Sydney, some in the North Shore, Northwest region, where you've got homes that originally get listed for about 1300, 1400 a week. They've dropped down in price. I was talking to Emma, this property manager over in Epping, a house that just got sold 6 7 weeks ago. Got sold for $2,764,000 in Epping. It's now being rented, and the asking rental on that, I was talking to her on Saturday, is currently 1,400. Now, I just said, look, I've got a family. I just wanted to see what she would say. I said, look, I've got a family that I'm representing, and they're looking at moving into the area. Would your landlord, your owner, consider a long-term lease? And she said, yeah, they would. I wanted to fish out as to, what the why somebody, for starters, paid $2,765 for this particular house in Epping, and and whether it was an investor, or whether they had plans, whether they were going to demolish it. I knew it was a WeChat chatter at the border. But she said, no, they've just they're not going to do anything to the house. They're not going to renovate it, not planning on knocking it down. They just simply wanted to buy an investment property, and they have, because I said to her, look, would they consider a long-term lease? And she said yes. And I said, then my follow-up question to that was, so if my clients like the property, when I show them the link, and they do want to approach you guys for a long-term lease, would you also reduce the price? And said, yeah, look, they are negotiable. So this is the conversations that I believe some property managers are willing to have, and that you should be having with the with your property manager. She was quick on her toes, and she said, look, if your clients want a 2 year lease, we will put in the agreement that there'll be a certain rental increase after the first 12 months. And I said, yeah, that's that's no issue there. But yeah, just to fish out what this property manager was had in her head, who bought the property, get a bit of background information, because I haven't really touched base with a lot of property managers of late, and it was an interesting conversation. So having said that, again, I encourage our followers and our viewers to go and have that chat with your property manager, particularly if you want to stay in your suburb in an area. And more to the point, if you're on a rolling lease, in other words, you're rolling month by month, because if your repayments, or sorry, if your rents are not meeting the repayments, only going to be sooner than later that particular property owner is going to put the property on the market for sale.
Yes, absolutely, Edwin. And it's a tricky time, but I think you're right. Being proactive is a good recommendation. Now we're going to move finally into tip of the week, and your tip of the week this time, well, it's a photographic extravaganza, is all I can say.
Well, look, this is what happens when you rely on, or this is what you find, should I say, this is what you find when you rely on the agents, vendors, the building inspection reports, right? So according to this particular agent, there was only minor issues with this property. This is the this the minor issue is now that they have to rebuild the bathroom, laundry, and all the pretty much all the wet areas that are attached to these to these to the laundry and the bathrooms. So that these the termites have just gone absolutely feral. But then again, this is what we keep on saying, Martin. If a building inspector spends 15 to 20 minutes doing a building and pest report in order for you to go, to buy it online and attend an auction with confidence, well, you're only asking for trouble, right? You're only asking for trouble. None of our building inspectors that we use when we do our final building and pest reports for our clients, none of them would spend less than an hour and a half. And most of the time, our building inspectors tell us that the agents got the shits with them because they spent an hour and a half in the property, looking through things and moving things more to, moving things around in order to get a better visual recognition of what's going on, or potential issues that may be going on by different signs that you can see. With this particular property, not only was the termite damage so extensive, but there was evidence, a number of things that a novice would have picked up would have been the bloody water stains going up the wall. And then you've got to ask yourself the question, why did they use gyprock in the wet areas in the first instance? So all these things, but yet they're not reported on. And now they have to, spend a hell of a lot more money to rectify this. So we're assisting them with the rectification work. They call this in. There's nothing they could do with regards to taking the agent or the inspector to task because the property was bought a while ago. But this is the effect of it. So I've also sent you a video, Martin, with regards to what a selling agent said to me over the weekend when I asked him if they would trust, or if they or what they thought of the before you bid reports that that they themselves issue out, or people buy online, that most agents or agencies in Sydney are using now, before you go out and bid.
Good old before you bid contract. Which you trust those, mate?
I've never used them. Buy a contract, I'll buy a person doing nothing. The thing is, like, buyers will buy it, and it's enough for them
and he says, I'll never use it, won't trust them. Thing is, buyers will buy it because it's enough for to give them confidence to attend the auction. So if the selling agent won't trust the building report that they promote, that says a lot, right? That's well, what does
Absolutely.
that tell you?
Yeah. Well, I've told you, and I'll repeat it again, that the way to think about those reports is it's part of the marketing campaign. That's all it is. It's part of the marketing campaign. It's nothing to do with the structural integrity of the property. You cannot rely on it as a purchaser to be sure that it's covered all of the potential defects that you might find. So you need to do your own work, your own survey, separate from what might be provided. And there's very limited recourse that you've got. Because if you look at all the little riders and all the other little weasel words that are actually in that report, it isn't worth the paper it's written on, in my view. And yet people rely on it and say, well, if the agent says that it's fine, or if the vendor's building surveyor says it's fine, it must be fine. No, you cannot assume that, can you?
Not at all. Not at all. And look, there's again, I go back to the amount of time. How do you get a good indication of the state of a property if, one, the building inspector doesn't go in the subfloor area if there's a subfloor area? I know, and I've read reports, and I've seen photos, and I've shared many years ago on the Monday rant where there were the 10 and 15 liter cans of paint obstructing access into the manhole to get into the subfloor area of homes in the North Shore, and in the report, it states are unable to access to access the manhole, or to access the to get access to gain access to the subfloor area to inspect properly, and it stops there. I mean, and when you look at it, when we do our own inspections back then, when this this was, I think it was in Northbridge, from off the top of my head, it was literally a 10-liter can of paint and a 15-liter drum of paint, and just moved to the side and got underneath it, to see what was happening under there, and sure enough, it was basically a river flowing through the guts of the home after the rains, and some sunken piers. Now, it all this adds value. Adds cost, sorry, adds cost to the value that people, or to the price, and the excitement that people were paying back then, or even now, in moving forward, because you see all these new fancy shiny new kitchen bench tops, but that's nothing in comparison to what you could be up for. With the stuff that you're not seeing. And this is a classic example of what happens when you rely and trust the selling agent's words or reports that they hand you over. That should be the first warning bell, when they try to persuade you to get the before you bid report, or they've got one on hand and they hand it over to you. Because at the end of the day, they're not going to, the building inspectors aren't going to bite the hand that feeds them, right? Because if they are too thorough, well, then they're not going to be asked to go and conduct another building inspection ever again for that agency.
Absolutely. And you might like to know that when I was a building surveyor years ago, a full structural survey would be a minimum of 3 hours. And we'll quite often go for 5 or even 6 hours, depending on the property. So that gives you a bit of a quantum of what's required. And I don't know whether you heard it in the background, but I have to tell you that I've got the two dogs here, and they're both snoring loudly at the moment. They went out for their walk this morning, so there might have been some noises off. If so, it wasn't me, it was the dogs.
No. I know whether you've noticed, Martin. I've been relegated back to my studio. Dusty and Evan kicked me out of the studio because I pressed the wrong buttons in there, in the computers over there, and everything went dark. So, so I got kicked out of this studio, and I'm back to mine. It's the my studio, gym, what else, storage, everything. So that's why I was using the other, because it was all the stuff's just being stored in here temporarily, as we've been getting stuff from overseas. So now, but now, I got turfed, so that's why I'm here and not over there.
Yeah, you've been relegated back to the doghouse, which is probably right. Edwin, I want to say thank you for your time today. As always, some really important points that we've made, and I look forward to doing all again next week, when, of course, there'll be more property rants coming, because there's so much to talk about. See you soon.
Chat next week, man. All the best.
Cheers. Bye-bye.